It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. An after-school program in Wayne County gives teachers a chance to be more creative.
The teachers, I think, find it refreshing because they don't have as many, you know, restraints, and they're not on such a tight schedule. So they're able to do things that they might not typically be able to do during the regular day.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. West Virginia University's Festival of Ideas is a lecture series that brings newsmakers, public figures, and thought leaders to campus to engage the community in important issues of the day. Last week, Jake Harriman gave a talk about extreme poverty in the world and his mission to end it. A West Virginia native and former U.S. Marine, Harriman toured the Middle East, Africa, and Asia, where he saw firsthand the devastating effects of extreme poverty. He founded Nuru International in order to lift rural farming communities out of poverty and into a cycle of self-sustainability. Glennis Board spoke with Harriman about Nuru and extreme poverty and brings us this report. However, a warning, this story contains descriptions of wartime events that may not be suitable for children.
Nuru is the Kiswahili word for light, and it connotes hope. Jake Harriman created the organization at Stanford University, and he says he's just a few years away from being able to definitively demonstrate how to end poverty.
I believe that our civilization is at a crossroads. Either we continue destroying each other, or we make the connection that the only chance we have to see the end of terrorism is to end extreme poverty.
That's Jake Harriman in an online video that introduces the goals of Nuru. In a talk at WVU, Harriman shared lessons he's learned in his campaign to end poverty in the world. But first, let's define the beast.
One of the things that Nuru is trying to do is actually change the whole conversation about extreme poverty. The classic definition, according to the World Bank, is living on less than $1.25 a day. But a lot of my background and experiences that I saw in when I was in combat and the desperation and hopelessness in the eyes of the folks that I was working with and sometimes fighting didn't seem to match up with just that strictly economic definition.
Harriman says his definition of extreme poverty is a condition where people are unable to make meaningful choices to secure their basic human rights. He experienced people stuck in these conditions firsthand when he was a Marine. He says it was one experience in particular at the beginning of the Iraq War that changed his life's trajectory. Now, a warning, this next part gets quite graphic and may not be suitable for children or those with delicate dispositions.
I looked up the main avenue of approach on Highway 7 and I saw a little white car coming toward our position. And I thought, they packed explosives in the car, they're going to try to blow themselves up in our position. So I grabbed a couple of my guys and we took off running toward the car to try to get it to stop, and it wasn't stopping, so I fired a warning shot across the hood of the car. It finally stopped about 50 meters out.
It should be noted here that Harriman and his colleagues hadn't eaten in a couple of days. They were sleep deprived and terrified, common wartime circumstances.
The driver jumped out, started waving his arms frantically and sprinting at us. And I think, okay, this guy's strapped bomb to himself. He's going to try to blow himself up, so I'm yelling at him in Arabic to try to get him on the ground. He's not responding. So I pick up my weapon. I think I'm going to have to take him out. And I look behind him, and I see a large black military truck roll up behind his little white car. And six guys in black ran up to his car and started shooting into his car. And this man stopped dead in his tracks, started screaming, and turned around and started sprinting back to his car. And that's when I realized what was happening. This guy was one of those poor farmers trying to escape across our lines with his family. And so I yelled at my guys to tell them to take the fedayeen out as I sprinted to try to save this guy's family. But by the time I got there, it was too late. His wife was in the passenger side. She was shot in the face and in the chest, and she was slumped over dead. And he had a little infant baby girl in the back. Her arm had been shot off, and she'd been shot in the head. She was dead, and then he was cradling the little body of his little six-year-old girl who'd been shot in the stomach, and she was choking on her own blood. And this guy was, beside himself, and you know, I, for the first time in the war, everything slowed down for me. And I put myself in this guy's shoes. And I thought, you know, I live in a world of choices. Where do I want to go to school? What do I want to have for breakfast? Where do I want my kids to grow up? You know, what choices did this guy have when he woke up this morning?
Harriman explained that southern Iraq was one of the poorest areas in the world at the time. A lot of hunger, no access to health care, water, or education. The Iraq army and Saddam's special forces, the Fedayeen, were retreating to make a final stand in Baghdad, but stopping in these rural areas along the way, telling impoverished farmers that if they would just fight, their children would be looked after.
You know, like, it's not fair that the GPS coordinates of this guy's birthplace dictated that he had no choices in this world. And so I thought that maybe I can make even more of an impact on the war on terror myself if I got out and tackle what I believe is the leading contributor to the proliferation of terrorism and insurgency and kind of general global instability, which is extreme poverty. And that kind of led me on this quest.
In his talk at West Virginia University, Harriman outlined key lessons he's learned that guide his efforts in impoverished places, lessons that he says are applicable in all areas stuck in poverty. Harriman primarily stresses the importance of leadership and finding leaders within communities. He says it's fundamental if the end goal is to leave a community able to self-sustain. Harriman says after you determine who within the community is already standing, dedicated and committed to the health and well-being of that community, conversations then have to happen about the specific needs in critical areas, hunger, ability to cope with economic shock, preventable disease and death, and access to quality education. Then, Harriman says, it's time to research best practices to form an integrated approach to provide for those specific needs.
And we work with the local leaders to analyze those different solutions. And we kind of analyze them using three sets of criteria around impact, sustainability, and scalability. And then they choose the solutions that will work best in their communities. So there's a lot of ownership there.
Harriman refers to the final step as the sustainability engine.
You have to put something in place that will ensure that the work that you're doing with the community can last. And so that's where we focus on our leadership program to build capacity in leaders and on our financial engine where we build a diversified, scalable business to fund the work after we're gone.
He's currently touring the U.S., raising funds and awareness to grow his organization.
We want to open source our model. We want to share it with other organizations and governments and train them how to use it so that we can spread the success of this model and the impact of giving more and more people choices more quickly. You know, I have this crazy urgency that I live with every day. You know, every day I wake up and I see that man's eyes, you know, on Highway 7, and it drives me. You know, every day I get out of bed and I'm like, that has got to stop. There's far too much unnecessary death that I've seen in this world, and we can stop it together, you know.
Harriman says he's seen his model work in countries around the world, and he also believes it could help communities right here in Appalachia pull themselves out of poverty. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:38. A freeze warning until 9 o'clock this morning for portions of Greenbrier County and frost advisories in the eastern part of the state, becoming sunny and breezy today with temperatures in the 50s and 60s. A statewide conference will be taking over the small town of Richwood in Nicholas County this weekend. Create West Virginia is holding its sixth annual conference there. Rather than meeting at a large state resort park, attendees at the conference will hold their discussions about creative economic development in buildings throughout the town. Entrepreneurs will set up pop-up shops in some of the empty storefronts on Main Street in Richwood. Young entrepreneurs like textile maker Nellie Rose Davis will debut her latest fashion line. Cutting-edge technology will be featured in a maker's lab that features 3D printers and the like. Create West Virginia is a grassroots organization that's striving to build creative communities and businesses for an innovative economy. Rebecca Kimmons is the director of this year's Create West Virginia Conference. What makes this conference unique?
I don't think that there's ever anywhere been a conference that goes to a town like Richwood and recreates the town for the 3 days of the conference.
There's no conference center in Richwood. It's not like hundreds of people can come and sit in one room and listen to speakers, right? So
that's
you
right.
have to take a creative approach, because that's why you create West Virginia, in order to accommodate all of the people who will be coming into the small town.
That's right.
To discuss and hear speakers.
That's right. Mm. The interesting thing is that I think we'll probably have the nicest auditorium that we've ever had for any of the conferences. It's a 500-seat theater at Richwood High School. It's got lights. It's got sound. It's got everything we need, comfortable seats. So I'm really happy about that. And when we leave, we won't be going out of the conference hall to the small breakout rooms. We'll be going to places around Richwood. And it's kind of interesting. It's really been fun putting that together. The First Church of God is going to be one of our breakout rooms, the basement there. That they've got a very nice fellowship hall that they've offered us. We'll be going to the American Legion Hall. We'll be going to City Hall, the second floor of City Hall, and to the library, which is just absolutely lovely. And then we're going to two of these storefronts up on the main street that have been closed up for a long, long time.
And what's going to be in those storefronts?
Well, the storefronts, we've got a block of buildings on East Main Street that are actually a National Historic Register district. They've been shut up for many years, some of them as long as maybe 30 years. And various efforts have been made to put things in there, but this time with Create West Virginia, we're bringing critical mass. And we're Tamarack's going to be in there. Sustain U is going to have a place. Create Buchanan is coming down to do a display. The entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs of Fayetteville have risen to the occasion. And so I've got Wilderness Woods doing a display. I've got Virgin Timber Lumber coming in. There's a new business here in Kanawha County called Kanawha Bicycle Works. They're going to come and do a storefront. They're going to start manufacturing bicycles. That's pretty cool. And so I'll have a shop called Bike Them On, because the town of Richwood is surrounded by the Monongahela National Forest. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ones I really love, a thing that started out as a fiction in my head, which is coming into reality, it's called Buck's Wild Outdoors. There was a man named Ed Buck in Richwood who did foraging in the backcountry for many years, every spring. And he did a formal backcountry trip, and people were invited. So Ed Buck is pretty famous in Richwood many years back. It's probably he's probably been dead for 25 or 30 years mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. But I remember Ed Buck. So we thought it would be fun if we had Buck's Wild Outfitters. And so we've got trout guides, professional trout guides, who are coming in and creating an outdoor store. It'll be all tricked out with really wonderful trout fishing gear, because the fishers know around West Virginia that that fishery up there, those three rivers that converge in that area, are a truly no-hype, world-class trout fishery. Mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily want the whole world to know that, mm-hmm. but it has to be managed well. It has to be managed smart. So we feel like that's an amazing asset that certainly not every town in the world has, a world-class trout fishery right there in its back door. So we're looking forward to people getting smart about that.
Who should attend this conference? Who would really benefit from the information that you'll learn here and take back with you? Who should attend this conference?
I have said, and I maintain, that West Virginia's most creative minds should meet. I don't care whether they're scientists, if they're teachers, if they're creative artists in the way that we understand creative artists, painters, sculptors, if they're creative economic developers looking at what so many people would look at as a handful of despair. If, Charles Humphreys is a very creative man over in Point Pleasant. He's worked wonders over there. We have an amazing group of creatives. Dave Arnold is one of the most creative businessmen in West Virginia. He's going to be one of our speakers in our 20-some panels that we're doing. I had the privilege of working with Dave for about 15 years, and he was amazing in his vision for what West Virginia tourism could be, and with his own company. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm inviting people. Oh, I've got James McNeil, who worked for the Cherry Tree Theater in New York City. He's now working with the Contemporary American Theater Festival in Shepherdstown. Turns out James McNeil is from Marlinton, West Virginia, grew up there. So he's coming over, and we're going to be talking. Oh, John Manchester is another creative who happens to be the mayor of Lewisburg. John Bright, a creative up in Thomas, West Virginia. So if you think you're creative, come on. Come on in and get head-to-head with some of the creatives in West Virginia who are actually doing it. So I don't care who you are. If you're a housewife and you've got some big dreams, this is a place for you.
Becky Kimmons, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
The Create West Virginia Conference opens in Richwood on Thursday, October 24th, and runs through Saturday, October 26th. For more information, visit our website, wvpublic.org. As part of a nationwide celebration of after-school programs, Lavalette Elementary in Wayne County took part in Lights On After School, Get Up and Go last week. Clark Davis has the story.
At nearly 9,000 schools around the country, students from elementary to high school took part in the annual Lights On After School program last week. Over 150 kids attended the event here at Lavalette Elementary. The students had dinner. Listen to instruction. And participated in STEAM-related activities. The after-school program was sponsored by Playmates Preschools and Child Development Centers Incorporated, the Wayne County Board of Education, and the After School Alliance. Amy Wagner is with the Playmates Preschools and Child Development Centers and the 21st Century Wayne County Community Learning Centers program.
Their after-school programs all over the United States are celebrating today, and it's to help raise awareness and promote after-school programs locally within your communities, and it's helped raise awareness with the parents and children and community members about the importance of having safe after-school programs to go to in your communities.
Wagner says after-school programs play a vital role for young students.
The after-school time is the high-risk time for students between 2 and 6, so it's important for them to have a safe place to go after school and be able to have dinner or a snack and have enrichment activities, tutoring services, a safe place to be while their parents or family members may be working.
At 30 sites in Wayne County and 3 in Cabell County, the students are taught by certified teachers who work after hours in the after-school program. The goals of the program, they say, are to help raise the academic level, cut down on dropouts, and to increase school attendance. The focus during the annual Lights On After School celebration was STEAM, or Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Math. Through activity stations that had students creating robots out of Legos. Okay.
Base plate. Yes, we just.
My theme is I have a carousel. So if y'all want to build me something to go to the theme park.
Looking at rocks from prehistoric times.
These are all from West Virginia. You can find these in your backyard. See there?
And creating their own plastic.
Our plastic is made completely of cornstarch, water, and a little bit of food coloring. Okay?
Students touched on each of the STEAM areas. Jessica Williamson and her daughter, fourth grader Jessalyn Perry, took part in the program.
It gives them something to do. It also helps them learn. They have different activities, different learning programs for them. So to me, that's very important as a parent to make sure that my child has something educational to do rather than being out on the street and getting into trouble.
Williamson says the program teaches the students in a unique and interesting way.
It's really neat to see how the different kids react to it, to see which ones actually entertain into the different activities, because some of them will draw to the Legos, some of them will draw into, and they're also going to make homemade slime. So it kind of is neat to see which kids draw to which activity.
I like to take part in like the Legos and the slime and the airplanes.
So you're kind of an all-around girl.
Except the elephant toothpaste.
Yeah.
Jeanette Barker is the executive director of Playmates Preschools and Child Development Centers Incorporated. She says the fun atmosphere is beneficial to both the students and teachers.
The teachers, I think, find it refreshing because they don't have as many, you know, restraints, and they're not on such a tight schedule. So they're able to do things that they might not typically be able to do during the regular day. So it motivates teachers to want to be part of the expanded learning time.
The Lights On After School program is in its 14th year. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.